Hello and welcome to Quilt Achieviate's Markets Uncut podcast, your weekly insight into the topics and trends that we've been exploring for you here at Quilt Achieviate. Remember, so you don't miss future episodes, be sure to hit the follow button on whichever streaming platform you are listening on or by following hashtag QCWeeklyComment on LinkedIn. I'm Jack Bishop, investment manager based out of our Manchester office, and this week I'm pleased to be joined by Richard Carter, our head of fixed interest research, and Ben Barringer, one of our global equity research analysts covering all things tech. Good morning to you both. The last week, after falling below the Bank of England's 2% target last month, UK inflation rose to 2.3% on the year, driven largely by an increase in energy bills as the latest increase in the energy price cap came into effect. So that tailwind that we'd seen from lower energy prices seems to have fallen out of the year-on-year comparisons now. And then we also had increases in things like airfares, hotel prices and restaurants, which pushed services inflation up to about 5% and core inflation now tracking at 3.3%. So, Richard, just give us your take on the inflation print. And then after the Bank of England cut rates earlier this month, do you think it puts to bed any speculation that there will be a rate cut at the December meeting? I think the MPC seems to have signalled that really even before the inflation print.
Yeah, I think that's right, Jack. I think the mood music coming out of Bank of England is that they're in no great rush to sort of slash rates at this stage and probably happy to proceed, you know, maybe one cut every quarter, something like that. So, and they, you know, a few of them appeared in front of Parliamentary Select Committee and that was very much the message. So, yeah, I mean, inflation numbers, a bit disappointing. Let's not get carried away. It's still well below 3%. It's a lot better than where it was a year or so ago. But, you know, some of the volatile items in the service sector were pretty strong. Energy prices picked up. But it makes sense if the Bank of England just, you know, takes it gradually with a rate cut. So next one is probably likely to be February, I think. And as you say, it doesn't look very likely we'll get one in December.
Yeah, I guess. And then kind of supporting that view, at the end of last week, we had PMIs released, so across Europe, UK and in the States. So in Germany, composite PMI dropped to 47.3, down from 48.6. Manufacturing PMI, clearly very important for the German economy, given it's kind of export orientated, saw a slight improvement, but still at 43.2, so very much in contraction territory. And then in France, composite PMI again slipped to 44.8. That's down from 48.1. So a big drop there. And then the main takeaway, I think, really was the services PMI again fell significantly down to 45.7. So quite a sharp contraction there. So firstly, for our listeners who might not be familiar with PMIs, just a quick explanation of what they are and why they're useful as macroeconomic indicators. And then specifically on the Eurozone PMIs, both Germany and France really struggling and deeply in contraction territory. And then with Trump kind of eyeing up tariffs and the anemic growth across the Eurozone, are you concerned about the euro area? And where does that leave the ECB? Arguably, they have already been cutting more aggressively than other central banks.
Yes, and probably will go on doing so. I mean, yeah, growth in Europe is a bit of a concern, you know, particularly in Germany with the manufacturing sector it's definitely putting pressure on the ECB. I mean, the PMIs are useful indicators. They're sort of survey data from sort of leading manufacturers and businesses, and they return the survey data and, you know, give quite a lot of information about, you know, new orders, export orders, what they're doing with employment, what they're doing, what they're seeing with sort of input costs and all the rest of it. So they're quite a useful so-called leading indicator for the economy. You can never get too focused, like most economic data, on sort of 1 month's numbers. You've got to look at the trend. But when quite a lot of data is kind of lagging, you know, indicators, you know, things like unemployment, even sort of the GDP numbers that come out, this is supposed to, you know, PMIs are supposed to be sort of more forward-looking, so are quite useful. Yeah, I mean, you know, Europe is struggling. We know that ECB is cutting rates. And, you know, the reaction on Friday in bond markets was to sort of price in even more cuts with ECB. And the next meeting in December, there's talk that they may even go with a 50 basis point cut, which would be pretty aggressive for them. Not sure that's what will happen. I think 25 is more likely. But certainly in contrast to some other central banks, They're definitely looking to get those rates down.
And then if we look at the UK, so following the tax rises announced at the budget by Rachel Reeves, the UK composite fell into contraction territory only just, so down to 49.9 for November. So I think the increase in the national insurance contributions from the employers was cited as the main reason for a loss of confidence and the lowest reading in a year. So it really complicates the pictures for Labour's growth plan. And services, normally quite a bright spot for the UK economy, did slip down from 52 to 50. So what was the reaction in markets from gilts and sterling following the release? And your thoughts on the UK economy as we look into 2025? We've had the weaker growth in Q3. If you now factor in maybe higher energy costs, higher costs for businesses, a national living wage, do you think things have to get worse before they get better?
Yeah, potentially. I mean, it's not as bad as Europe, but the numbers weren't great, and gilt yields fell and sterling fell on the back of it. Although, as I said, I don't think it was, you know, they were bad enough to make the Bank of England want to cut rates in December. I don't think there's probably been a huge change to that because of their, you know, their concerns over inflation. I mean, I think the interesting thing is with the budget, you know, they did all these measures and they're very pro-growth and all the rest of it, supposedly. But looking at analyst forecast for the UK economy, you know, GDP forecast, it hasn't touched the sides. I mean, it's just, there's not been any big upgrades on the back of the budget. To your point, you know, businesses aren't happy about the increase in all the costs, you know, national insurance. There is supposed to be a bit of a public sector splurge coming, all that borrowing to spend on the NHS and all the rest of it. But I'm not sure whether that's going to translate very directly into better growth. So the outlook isn't great. Probably we do need to see the Bank of England cut rates, you know, fairly quickly. But they're dragging their heels a little bit because of inflation. And then Trump's economic policies, probably, you know, potentially with tariffs, aren't exactly going to help. So it's not great for the UK at the moment. Albeit, as I say, it's probably not quite as bad as Europe.
And I guess in stark contrast to the weak PMIs and kind of disappointing figures, over in the US, PMIs firmly in expansion territory. So largely on the hopes of lower interest rates, more business-friendly policies and deregulation, potentially from the incoming administration. So continuing a strong theme, really, of that strong US data versus the rest of the developed world. And just a quick summary, Rich, if you don't mind, on the readings in the US, just to cap off.
Yeah, they were the manufacturing's not that strong actually, but the services was sort of gangbuster number, and I think the 57. That's very much in expansion territory. I think the fact that the election's out of the way, you got pro growth. Okay, there's might be some crazy stuff going on, but you know, pro growth kind of administration coming in. You know, it's looking pretty good for the US. They've got worries. You know, sticky inflation, massive deficit. That's going to constrain what the Fed can do in terms of rate cuts. But certainly growth there is a lot stronger than here. And sort of, yeah, US exceptionalism continues for sure.
Absolutely. Thanks very much, Richard. Ben, if we can come to you now, you've had a busy couple of weeks. So ASML's Capital Markets Day, then Morgan Stanley's Tech, Media and Telecoms Conference last week. So lots to talk about from your perspective, and great our analysts are able to get out there and attend these sorts of events. So if we could start with the big event last week, which was arguably Nvidia's earnings. I think on the whole, market assessed them probably as good enough, which does seem a bit unfair when you double your revenue year over year. The day after the results, stock was quite volatile, so opened up about 4%, then fell, then finished up about 0.5%. So could you just talk us through the results and what you think it might mean for the stock going forward?
Yeah, absolutely, Jack, and good morning. Yeah, look, so remember that Nvidia is now the world's biggest company. It's just slightly bigger in market cap terms than Apple, and a little bit bigger as well than Microsoft. And so Nvidia, last couple of quarters has really felt like a real bellwether for the stock market. I would argue, you know, incrementally compared to 3 months ago, I think that there's people are a little bit more happy with the broadening of the market. You know, it did feel like AI was the only trade out there 3 months ago, and Nvidia was the absolute linchpin to market sentiment. I think that has broadened. Firstly, as I say, because of, you know, small and mid cap diversity and an improvement there, and also, you know, the advent of the Trump administration means there are some other interesting stories and potential things for us to spot in terms of the portfolio. But yeah, down to Nvidia's results, as you say, that's dead right. They were just good enough. They've got back to this cadence that the market's been used to of them beating by about $2 billion. It's actually 2.6 this quarter. And so, you know, on a sort of $35 billion revenue base, that's pretty reasonable. Growth, as you say, doubled, 94% growth. The main driver, of course, is the data center business, which is now almost 90% of the business. And profitability was up, you know, 110%. So, yeah, digging into the details of those numbers, you know, they're seeing very strong demand from their current product, Hopper, and then Blackwell, which is their latest generation. That's going to ramp over the next sort of 6 months. So it started shipping, but you really won't hit scale for a couple of quarters, basically. In terms of one thing we look at is their customer base, you know, because it's easy to think that the only people buying Nvidia chips are the big cloud service providers, but that's actually only about 50% of revenues. And so enterprises, you know, big Fortune 500 companies, they talked about Accenture and Deloitte, the consulting companies using them. And then, of course, there's about 10, 15% of revenues is sovereigns. So that's governments building AI data centers. They talked this quarter about Indonesia and India being some of the latest, you know, governments to join that race, as it were. The other thing that people really focus on, of course, though, is the guidance for next quarter. And they did it, you know, again, just enough to satisfy people. It was about $500 million more than people have been expecting. Now, the thing that's really sort of debating in the stock is still growing very fast, but next quarter it will slow from 94% growth to around 70% growth. And, you know, sometimes investors don't like that slowing of growth. We remain reasonably content with the position in Nvidia. We don't want to be aggressively overweight, but we certainly think it's worth right to be up to weight. So, you know, thinking about the pros and cons, I think there's three pros. You know, demand is still outstripping supply. Second of all, you know, they have got this very good product cadence, so a new product every year, and each product brings with it, you know, incremental improvements in performance, but also importantly, performance per watt. So that's, you know, energy consumption. And then finally, you know, they've got a very good product stack. So not just chips, but also software and also networking. And that makes them a formidable competitor. On the risk side, you know, we do watch demand and any ebbing in demand, or even, you know, the Asian supply chain and making sure that the supply is still coming through. Second of all, is there any signs of digestion from the big cloud service providers? You know, incrementally they tend to build for a couple of years and then digest what they've bought, and we haven't seen any signs of that yet, but it is a risk going forward. And then the final risk for Nvidia, I think, is around power. And the, you know, we can try and build these data centers that are full of Nvidia chips, but can we actually power them? And so power is a legitimate constraint that we've done a lot of work on and we continue to monitor actively. So yeah, so in summary, you know, much ado about nothing, Jack, but you know what, it still remains a very exciting story, I think.
That's brilliant, Ben. Thank you very much. If we just stick with semiconductors, as I mentioned, you recently attended ASML's Capital Markets Day over in the Netherlands. It's been, to say the least, a bit of a volatile year for the stock. So having peaked at around €1,000 over summer, it's fallen back to around 650 this morning as we're recording this. So did the Capital Markets Day help assuage any concerns you might have had following the Q3 results? And could you share anything else of interest for our listeners from the Capital Markets Day?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's been a tumultuous year for ASML. Actually, the stock is broadly flat on the year, but it had a very strong, you know, beginning to the year, first 4 or 5 months. And as you say, it got up to almost €1,000. They have since warned about profitability basically into 2025. A number of reasons for that. First of all, a little bit of uncertainty about China and some of the impacts that the restrictions there are going to have. They think that China will fall from about 40% of sales to about 20% of sales, but still quite a lot of uncertainty about that. So that's the first thing. And then second of all, they've seen some pushouts in orders, principally because of the woes that Intel and Samsung have had. You know, Intel is struggling to compete with TSMC. Samsung has had some mis-execution, particularly in its memory business, which is Samsung's biggest business, where it's facing competition from Hynix. So there was a lot of uncertainty, and management, particularly the new chief executive, had to try and restore credibility at this capital markets day. And I think they did a reasonable job on the long term, right? So they mainly talked about their 2030 targets. And so they're basically guiding for somewhere in a range, somewhere between 8 and 14% growth out to 2030, which is great because, you know, they've got great visibility on those 2030 numbers. They, in terms of the composition of what makes up those, that sort of long-term guidance, they guided up artificial intelligence, as you could probably imagine, but they guided down other areas. So, you know, PCs, consumer electronics, industrial and things like that. So gave a lot of detail. It was a 5-hour presentation with 250 slides and lots of technical detail on how you make semiconductors. But I think, you know, overall, end markets look reasonably robust. Wafer spending, so that's, you know, how many of those disks of silicon does it take to make a chip, and then also how much lithography goes into that. So lithography is ASML's core business, so lithography is essentially printing those chips. So we remain reasonably content with the longer term. As I say, no guidance or no real chat at the capital markets day about China. You know, there's still probably some further restrictions to come in the coming months, and I think that remains an overhang on the stock. And then second of all, you know, they didn't really got that, although they can guide to 2030 because of the sort of long-term nature of their business, 2026 and the exact timing of when orders fall still remains a little bit uncertain. So look, overall a very high quality company, but a little bit of uncertainty. We remain, you know, reasonably constructive, although we have slightly reduced our holding in ASML just to reflect, you know, the level of risk that we're taking, because we were extremely positive. And I think we've just, you know, that uncertainty still obviously means that we need to be a little bit more cautious.
Yeah, completely makes sense. Thanks, Ben. And then last week, as I mentioned, you were at Morgan Stanley's TMT conference. So just a bit of an insight, really. Main takeaways, anything of interest again?
Yeah, look, I've been attending this conference for a very long time, and it is probably Europe's best tech, media and telecom conference. Look, always there's some talk about macro, and I think the macro remains quite mixed, and you can probably align that with geopolitics, and we don't need to dive too much into the uncertainties in geopolitics. Richard covers that very, very well on a weekly basis. And then obviously there was a lot, you know, chat about AI and how much of AI is hype and how much is actual reality and tangible examples and so on. So that was very interesting. In fact, I actually presented on a panel where I was talking about some of the, you know, some of our AI use cases internally as well. So, look, I would highlight a couple of, you know, companies that I saw. We saw SAP. I thought they were very impressive. Arm was there, the Cambridge chip company. ASML I saw again, and then their sister company, ASM International, which does a different part of the chip making process. Talked to various chief technology officers as well. UMG, Universal Music Group, they're a very interesting business, one of the big three players that provide a music back catalogue. And then we saw Sage as well, and quite a few others as well. But those would be my highlights. Probably my favourite company out of the conference continues to be SAP. They're transitioning to the cloud very strongly, and they are getting benefits from AI, one of the first companies to really see tangible benefits from AI, principally using it to, they own a company called Concur that does travel expenses, and they're using generative AI to basically read receipts that they get in, which means they can be much more efficient in terms of staffing and processing those receipts. So yeah, that's probably the highlights, Jack. I'll leave it there.
That's brilliant, Ben. Thank you very much. And thank you to Richard as well, and to all of our listeners for listening. So did you enjoy our discussion on the podcast today? We'd love to hear from you. So please review the show now wherever you're listening and share it on your socials and tag us at QuiltAchieveIt. To make sure you don't miss a future episode, tap the subscribe button. We'll be back next week. In the meantime, you can head over to our website, www.quiltachieveit.com. where you can read the accompanying market overview as well as subscribe to our weekly comment newsletter. You can also stay up to date with our thoughts on market news, industry insights, and our upcoming events and webinars on our website or on our social media pages. And finally, we do love to hear from our listeners. So if you have a question you'd like to ask one of our experts for our next podcast, simply ask them via our weekly comments page on our website. And that's it for today. So thank you to Richard and to Ben for your time and to all of you for listening. See you next time.